All right, I'm going to talk to Debette today about comparisons of responses to elevated CO2 in free air and open-top chamber systems. And the first question is, who cares? We all know that CO2 is going up, and depending on CO2 emissions, right now it seems very likely we're going to hit between 500 and 600 parts per million, probably by 2050, if not sooner. We know it increases yield. Rising CO2 increases yield of basically all C3 crops. The question is, how much does it increase yields? We have basically two predominant methods of estimating for field systems how much CO2 is going to increase yield. Free air systems, which you're all familiar with, and open top chamber systems. The question is, do they give different answers? And what we're talking about is the target for crop modeling, and how much do we trust the targets that the experimentalists put out there. There's been debate about whether free air systems and open-top chamber systems give different answers about yield increases to increase CO2. Bruce Kimball very correctly pointed out that because we know that for every crop that we've looked at, there's significant cultivar variation in CO2 response, and we expect there to be location effects on CO2 response. If you don't have the same cultivars compared in the same location at the same time, you have a very weak comparison. There's only one study that I'm aware of where that problem has been overcome, and I'd like just to outline that to show you how limited our database is at this point. This is Kimball, 1997, using spring wheat in Arizona. Open top chambers, N equals 2, 2 ambient, 2 elevated, both very small chambers, 1.46 square meters. CO2 is applied 24 hours per day. That's fine in open top chambers, but in the phase system at that, the way that was run at that time, that confounded the CO2 effect with a night temperature effect. The results of that experiment, it's hard to say that there's any difference in the response between the phase and the open top, but I'd like to point out how small those yield increases are for wheat. I decided to pursue this a little bit slightly larger scale. The free air system that I use is what Hartwell Allen called an area distributed system, where you can see these emitters. Rather than being a ring perimeter system where you rely on wind to carry it across the crop, this system has a square array of emitters evenly distributed across the plot, which inject CO2 air mixture into it. So you're not relying on wind. So you can fumigate even when you have no wind speed. And in the background, you can see back here are these open-top chambers, which we're going to compare with a free air system. Open-top chambers are standard, fairly standard, just plexiglass chambers with a air blown into the bottom through a perforated PVC pipe, fairly standard. The experiments I'm going to talk about are ambient air and ambient air where we've increased that by 200 parts per million of CO2. And two experiments here, N equals 3, both for open top chambers and for the phase systems. First experiment had one variety of winter wheat, obviously from October to June, and soybean June to October, and the next year's experiment was basically exactly the same, except we had one more cultivar added for wheat and another cultivar added for soybean. So that's what I'm going to talk about. Cut to the bottom line. First, soybeans, seed yield. This is grams of dry mass per meter squared, sampled from 4 meters a row in each environment. If you look all of these, you see that the elevated treatment is always higher than the ambient treatment for both the face and the open-top chambers and for each year and for both varieties. What's not so obvious until you look at it carefully is that in all these cases, the yield increase is actually larger in the open-top chambers than it was in the free air systems. And just to look at that a little more clearly, just look at the yield ratio. Again, for Spencer in 2013, 2014, and for Holt in 2014. And each year, there's a substantially larger yield increase in the open-top chambers than there was in the free air system. The probability that those two systems are equivalent is quite small. Wheat is a little more confusing. Look first at the open-top chamber data for one variety in 2013, same variety in 2014, and the second variety in 2014. The open-top chambers always gave a yield increase at elevated CO2, like we expect. The free air system was mysterious. In 2013, the best we ever did was no yield difference between ambient and elevated CO2. And two other cases, the yield actually was lower at high CO2 in the free air system. If we look at midday leaf CO2 assimilation rates, see if we can find some basis for what we're finding in terms of yield. Basically, leaf CO2 assimilation rates, this being for soybean, the blue bars, elevated CO2, you get the sort of the stimulation of photosynthesis you expect, and it looks pretty much the same across all these treatments. I can't say that there's any evidence that there's a system difference between face and open top in terms of midday assimilation rates for soybean. And the same is true for wheat. Again, smaller increase for wheat than soybean because it downregulates some, but again, I can't statistically tell you that there's any evidence that the exposure system is affecting the response to high CO2 in terms of midday assimilation rates. When we go to metal conductance, we get a slightly different story. The simplest part of this is over here at this edge, the Holt variety in 2014, the face and the open top chambers look identical. But for Spencer, in both years, you can see a larger decrease in smell conductance at elevated CO2 is happening in the open top chambers than in the face system. If we look at wheat, that generalization, that observation from Spencer happened in every case in the wheat. In each case, side-by-side comparisons, you see a bigger decrease in smell conductance at elevated CO2 in the open top chambers than you see in the face system. If you look at one of the tools that modelers use to summarize relationships between smell conductance and CO2 assimilation rate, is called the Ball-Berry model of conductance, which is given right here. And looking just at Spencer, where I have 2 years of data to give enough so I can make some sense out of the regression equations. And this is midday rate, so there's no significant variation in light, so it's mostly variation in temperature and VPD that are being used to develop these this linear regression. Comparing open top chambers with face for ambient and for elevated, we see that the slope of the response curve here, this M in the equation, is higher in open top chambers than in the face system, both for ambient CO2 and for elevated CO2. So the face system is decreasing the slope compared to the open top chamber system. These are not real impressive R-squared values for this. Soybean is kind of a noisy crop that way. If you look at this for wheat, again, this is just one cultivar where I have 2 years of data. And again, it's just midday, so it's variation in temperature and vapor pressure deficit that's doing it. In this case, we get not both the same comparison we did in soybean, where the open-top chamber always has a steeper slope than the face treatment. But here again, in wheat, these are, for the most part, much better correlation coefficients. But we also see a difference between ambient and elevated in wheat. So the ambient open-top chamber has a higher slope than the elevated open-top chamber. And the same is true in the face system, that the ambient has a higher slope. If we look at the net stimulation in photosynthesis, this is midday photosynthesis, so it's light saturated. Just looking at the ratio of assimilation rate at elevated, measured at elevated, compared to ambient, measured at elevated. The standard biochemical model of photosynthesis has this ratio increasing as you go up in temperature. And I, in this data for soybean, this is Spencer for 2 years, I can't reject the idea that it's flat. Looks like a flat response. In wheat, which actually covers a little bit bigger range of temperature, from 17 here up to 30, again, I can't reject the idea that that ratio is flat. So there's no temperature interaction going on here. In wheat, we know the physiology behind that. It's an acclimation to temperature that's keeping this ratio flat. Nobody has investigated in soybean why it's flat, that I know of. Question I have is whether either system is correct about the CO2 response. And my concern has to do with the variability of CO2 in both of those systems. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about CO2 variation and just standard deviations of CO2 over time. And this is just, the averaging here is just in the analyzer itself. It's not in the data logger system. So it's roughly about a 6%, 6 second averaging of CO2 for each of these systems. You can see, get my arrow back here, the open top chambers, over 24 hours, you get a standard deviation of about 44, 45. Obviously, it's not going to be different between the two systems. The elevated over that same time scale in the open top chambers, you get twice the variation, twice the standard deviation. In face, it's a much bigger increase. So you get more variation over with time in the face system than you do in the open top chamber system, but both of them are obviously bigger than you do with the ambient CO2. And in the daytime, when CO2 in the ambient condition settles down to a midday fairly constant value, the standard deviation goes down. But again, it's much higher in the open top chambers and even higher than that in the face system. This is just a typical daily trace of CO2. The open circles here at the bottom are the ambient CO2. Obviously, midday, it's nice and flat. At night, it goes up. The phase system, this is just, again, these are just 6 second average values for CO2. You can see how noisy it is. This phase system operates in terms of the standard criteria, which everybody publishes about percent of time that it's within target. Just like everybody else's phase system. I don't think there's anything particular about this system. Everything works fine. You get the variation I was talking about in here, midday, daytime. And then you get a puff of wind. And wind speeds at somewhere around 10 meters per second, you no longer have CO2 addition, or you can't detect an increase in concentration. That's typical phase system. Open top chambers, this is scaled slightly differently. This variation is actually somewhat smaller here than the previous slide. It doesn't, not obvious, but that table showed you the real statistics. This is, again, you know, ambient CO2 in the daytime is really flat, and it sort of tracks it, but there's an awful lot of variation going on, and that worries me. In fact, I did an experiment in indoor chambers. This is sort of the third of a series of experiments I've done looking at the effects of variation in CO2. And just very briefly, I did indoor chamber experiments where I looked at the difference between the peak and the valley of CO2 as it cycles up and down with CO2 addition. And I changed that the height of that peak from 20 up to 60 parts per million, keeping the mean the same. This gives me standard deviations of 5 and 19 parts per million, so these are very low standard deviations. And the result of doing that is the higher variation resulted in 10% yield reduction, or dry mass reduction, after 22 days of planting. So I think on multiple time scales that plants don't like variation in CO2 concentration as it varies over time, and it just depresses their growth. More ideal, if we could do it in the field, is this kind of trace where the bottom line is ambient CO2. This is just a greenhouse with enough ventilation to track ambient CO2. And just a simple PID controller of high CO2, you can track even the wiggles of that reasonably well if you can prevent air intrusion. So that's what we would like to be able to do in the field, and we're working on it. Thank you.